Welcome to the She Recovers podcast. I'm Taryn Strong, co-founder with my mother, Dawn Nickel, of She Recovers. She Recovers believes that we are all recovering from something. And here on She Recovers podcast, we examine the healing power of connection and intentional living, as well as what happens in our lives when we put down our past stories and pick up our soul's true purpose. Welcome to this episode of the She Recovers podcast. This is also an episode of our She Recovers story series, so if you haven't had a chance to check out the video that goes with this podcast, please do. And in this episode, I had the chance to sit down with one of my teachers and mentors, Serafina Caprenos. She is a herbalist, a ritualist, and a homeopath. And her journey is one of suffering an injury to her spine when she was a teenager. And then with herbs and with a holistic approach to recovery, she's been on a lifelong journey of healing and is also someone who has dedicated her life to other people on a healing journey as well. So enjoy. This episode is full of lots of beautiful nuggets of wisdom, and we'll see you soon. Well, thank you so much, Serafina, for joining us today. Just so the listeners know, right now we are where we live in a beautiful, beautiful park called Duck Creek Park. And just want to let the listeners know that you may hear some noises in the background. There are some beautiful dogs being walked, and sometimes they, you know, emote and make sounds. And you may hear other sounds in the background as well. So thank you so much for your grace, everybody. And today I'm really, really, really excited to sit down with one of my mentors, Serafina, who I'm just still giggling because we're only meeting for the first time today, but I've been studying with Serafina for, is that 6 months now?
Yeah, about 6 months.
Wonderful. Yeah, I've been deepening my herbalism studies with Serafina, which has been an incredible gift. And I'm still trying to find the words to articulate how powerful the experience has been for me. So, and in that time that I've had to spend with Serafina, I've had the opportunity to hear bits of your story and just been really excited to introduce you to our community. Some did get to meet you during Mental Health Monday. So anybody who's listening, please check out the Mental Health Monday episode with Serafina. The link is in our show notes. So Serafina, can you please share with the listeners a bit about who you are, what you do, and maybe share a little bit more about where we are right now? Because you know more about this land than I do.
Absolutely. So thank you so much, Taryn. It's a blessing to meet you in person, to feel your energy. I mean, of course, I could feel some of you come through the video lessons that we've done and the live Zoom sessions, but it is special. And I also just want to let listeners know that we live in each other's backyards, which I think is really special too. And I always just take note of those kinds of synchronicities in life, right? Is who shows up and where, and how we end up where we end up, and where we end up calling home. So we are on the unceded territories of the Coast Salish people, specifically the Hulkumenum and the Senchothan speaking peoples. And where the part of the island where Taryn and I live is was particularly a place, this is called Duck Creek, but where the Coast Salish people would hunt ducks. There was a time where thousands and thousands of ducks would swim in and feed to the communities. And it was also a place where the indigenous peoples would harvest their shellfish. The waters here are warm and swimmable. We both live near a beach that is one of the warmest, I would say, in the Western Canada. And right now we are in late spring, so the sun has just come into Taurus. Today, the moon is also in Taurus, so we're in this beautiful new moon energy of Taurus, which is ruled by Venus. And when the sun moves into Taurus and when we have this luscious Venusian energy is when the plants are most ripe to be harvested. So we're seeing all the blooms and the beauty, and the air right now just smells heavenly. So it's a wonderful time to be here and to be gathering and to be talking about herbs and healing and magic.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And you wear many hats. And one of them, of course, that I have the privilege and pleasure of being a part of is your herbalism and herbalist hat. Can you share a little bit more about the other tools that you carry as a medicine woman?
Yes, so they're all intertwined. I guess I'll start with the beginning, which is I'm first generation Canadian on my mother's side, and my maternal grandparents, her parents, are still a huge influence. My grandfather just died a year and a half ago, but my grandmother still lives here, 2 minutes away from me. And my maternal grandparents raised my mother and then subsequently influenced my life with just using herbs for as medicine in our home. And they didn't even call themselves a herbalist. You know, often when I introduce myself just to contextualize my history, I often say I'm a third generation herbalist. But my grandparents didn't use that title because there wasn't such a title. In Europe at that time, 90 years ago, people needed to know about herbal medicine. They needed to know about how to heal the cough and the cold and the fever, because there wasn't a village doctor, or he was miles and miles away, or they were miles and miles away. So as I was being raised in the family home, I never went to the doctor, and it wasn't a political statement to avoid going to a doctor. It was simply what they knew was how to use herbal medicine and home remedies. And that played a huge role in my life, particularly coming of age when I started to wake up to feeling certain things and intuiting certain things. And I didn't talk to anybody about it, but maybe like you or some of our listeners, sometimes you just know things and you feel things. And I was one of those kids, and I have a vivid memory of being school aged, and I put my hand on my friend's back and I said, "You have pneumonia." And I didn't even know where that came from. I didn't even compute entirely what pneumonia was, but, and she wasn't sick. She didn't have symptoms per se, but she did come back to school a week later and said, "How did you know I had pneumonia?" And, so I had strange phenomenological things happen, and it resulted in a lot of anxiety. I had debilitating anxiety at that age because you didn't talk about these things. There wasn't any context. However, I did eventually start talking to my mom about it, who is still a deeply spiritual person and a huge influence in my life. And that's when I began to learn more about our family and more about the healing traditions. And that led, this was the early 90s, and at that time there were some herbal books in the bookshops, and there were little Wiccan books I stumbled across in feminist bookstores and goddessy bookstores in Toronto, where I grew up. So that helped, and it began to open my eyes to there being this world that I then knew would be called witchcraft. And it was only when I was 15 or 16 and I joined my first coven, and finally me and some girlfriends were experimenting and opening up and were able to talk about these things, that nowadays is widely accepted. And that's wonderful. But back then there wasn't so much of that context. So that's just to say my family was a huge influence. And then some of the more pivotal things that happened is I had a spinal injury, which left me bedridden for months. And then over the course of a few years, months over several years. So a lot of my later high school years were not like your usual teenage life. And that threw me down even deeper into the realm of how can I learn how to heal? What does healing mean? Because I recognized that it was far more than just taking a herb even, or taking a supplement. The medical establishment didn't have anything to offer but surgery. And my mom thankfully said, "Let's try everything else but surgery first." And in those years, when I was 16, 17, in bed, depressed because I couldn't spend time with my friends or peers, I went into a deep inner landscape, and I just began to unpack my anxiety, unpack my fears. I learned to row. I taught myself to row. I taught myself astrology and learning how to read charts, because that's kind of what I had time to do. And my mother was essentially a spiritual teacher at that time, and I read all these esoteric books that were 80, 100 years old, and I learned what I would call tools, shamanistic healing tools for the interior landscape. And that helped. And I learned how to work with energy, wake up that healing energy in my hands, work with my own body and my own body pain. It was a phenomenal time. And there was that anxiety and depression from not being able to be a normal high school kid, right? So it was a complex time. And then the second major piece of that life before coming into adulthood is my father was dying, and a horrible death. And it was a horrible time. He was dying from a serious illness. And however, what helped him function on a day-to-day level was when I would do hands-on healing with him, when I would work reflexology points, and when he was taking herbs. So it was this wonderful and yet I would say shadowy underworld journey of, in terms of an initiation. My first big initiation in life lasted several years with both my own health trauma and then my father's. And when, just before he died, I had a dream that I was working in the desert with a very petite, dark-skinned woman, and she was a teacher. And I ended up sharing that dream / vision with a friend who said, oh, that sounds like this woman Blade in New Mexico. And this was before the internet. So I got her phone number and I phoned her and I said, hi, you don't know who I am, but I had this dream. So-and-so gave me your phone number. I think I'm meant to learn from you. And she said, okay, I'll see you in 6 months. And I thought, yeah, right. At that time, I was just going into university. But lo and behold, my father died. I left university, I left herbal school because I was studying at Emerson College, and I moved to New Mexico to study with her. And that was the beginning of, I would say, massive training, let's just say, in terms of coupling herbal medicine, she was a herbalist, and deep shamanic healing. And then the last piece, I'm summarizing a lot of years and a lot of things, but the last piece in that was just before I went to see Blade. I had learned from the herbal school I was attending, Emerson College, about Susan Weed. And this was 98, 99. And I lived in Toronto, upstate New York wasn't that far. And so I ended up going there, which was the first moment I finally felt, oh, okay, this is who I am and what I am, which is a green witch and a priestess. And so I was there and we learned a lot. We did a lot of things. And just before that time with her ended, I went through an initiation of being, I guess you could say, ordained as a green priestess or green witch. So that was how my adulthood started. It was full of pain, full of massive trauma with my dad's death and my own just wanting to be a normal kid and wanting to be a normal teen. I was jealous. I'm not so much, but back then I was jealous of my friends who were partying and having a great time. And I was like, you know, bedbound in pain, going deep inside my inner realms and trying to figure out how to move through this underworld initiation. So that's kind of the beginning.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's so beautiful. And I really love how you shared about those two really big experiences as being initiations, because I know for me in my journey, and when I see other people as well going through what in the moment, it's so hard and it's so painful. And when we're in it, it sucks, right? It is hard. But when we can take that moment, and maybe not in it, but afterwards, just really reflect and see all the medicine that was in that and all the learning and all the growing and all the initiations that took place. It's such a beautiful realization. And then now I'm not as afraid of those types of initiations. I mean, I love when things are just going groovy, but I do know that they can just be such incredible allies in my own seeking life, right? And seeking more and getting deeper and deeper.
Yeah, I think it's helpful. And this kind of segues into, you know, the last 15 years, which is having tools to be able to navigate those underworld journeys is important, to be able to contextualize them. And I think that's what I was looking for, especially in those younger years. I'm now in my early 40s, but my late teens, my early 20s, most of my 20s was, what is going on? Like, why am I suffering so much? What's wrong with me? Or why can't I get my life on track? And everyone else seems to be having a great time, right? That's, of course, not the case. And being a clinical practitioner has shown me that. But I think having some context and developing tools and not doing it alone, right? Not navigating these underworld journeys alone. And that's something I'm passionate about and why I ended up teaching. So I've been teaching for about 15 years. I teach in a priestess tradition. I've taught priestess school. And I used to keep that real secret, actually. It's only been perhaps since 2015 where I started like putting that on my website and letting people know about that. It used to only be word of mouth because there was, and I think it's less, there is some now, but less, where there was a stigma, like being a witch was a bad thing and nobody knew really what that meant, or being a priestess seemed out there and strange and freaky. And I used to get hate mail because I'd put ads in the newspaper saying Imbolc ritual or Beltane ritual celebrating the pagan wheel of the year. Thankfully that doesn't happen anymore, but there was a time, right, where that happened. So that's just to come around to say, in reference to what you were saying, where those rites of passages can be glorious when we have context and when we have allies, like people, right? People to do it, go through those challenging times together, help navigate.
Exactly. Yeah. Having our empathetic witnesses just to see us in our healing and in our rising is so important.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Beautiful. And yeah, again, for me, when I claimed that I am a witch as well out loud, not just to friends and family who had always known, but when I put it out onto the interwebs like you did as well, that was I remember it being one of the scariest moments, but also one of the most empowering moments. And that was just a few years ago, but it felt like a real pivotal moment in my recovery of healing the witch wound and not being afraid of my voice anymore and just stepping into that. So, Serafina, do you consider yourself as someone who's in recovery? And if so, what would you say you're in recovery from?
Yeah, I mean, trauma, so much trauma. I'd say trauma and grief. I've had a lot of loss. Those are some big pieces. And the result of that would lead to anxiety and worry and kind of catastrophic thinking, which would lead to disordered eating. So it's kind of that whole mashup. And that led me, you know, sometimes when I'm working with clients or students, one of the things I've learned and I've seen in myself and others is that when we're in those moments of crisis and when we are in those kind of climax of suffering, it's often a sign, it's magnifying sometimes what's not working to show us to go, like, hey, look over here, let's go in the other direction. It's almost like the equal and opposite. So if we were looking at the wheel, I work with a lot of wheels in my teaching, whether it be the wheel of the year or the medicine wheel of earth, air, fire, water, the elemental wheel. It's like, what's across that wheel? And what can help get us there? And for me, it was herbs, of course, and magic. I do a lot of deep magic and ritual arts. That's kind of my other key modality that I don't talk too much about. It's not secret. But there are modalities that we can use to help magnify what's not working in order to see what is working, kind of looking across that wheel. So yes, to answer your question, lots of trauma-related, grief and loss-related recovery is what I'm in.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, herbs and ritual and magic are some of your tools. What else do you consider your healing tools that you use? Do you have any daily non-negotiables or daily rituals or monthly, or what are your staples?
Yeah, so in my personal life, I have an earth-based practice of grounding, aligning to the directions, the powers of earth, air, fire, water, and spirit. I align myself with my guides, and for me, it's the goddesses and then the elemental beings, the plant spirits, my own guides that I have made contact with since a very young age. And for me, it's important to connect to that wider web. I call it the sacred order of all things. I didn't claim that statement, of course, but that's the best way that I can speak to it, is when we or I connect with the sacred order of all things, it helps me move out of my own processes and connect to the wider web. And when doing that, not only does it calm my nervous system, because we heal when we activate that parasympathetic nervous system, right? So anything that I can do or we can do to activate that parasympathetic nervous system helps to make us more susceptible to healing. So my non-negotiable is doing some kind of connection practice. And then, yeah, taking herbs that are nervines that help to regulate the nervous system are key to my everyday practice.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And why do you think a holistic approach to healing and recovery is so important?
I think it's important because that is taking into context all of our parts. So we are whole beings, right? The human being is more like a garden than a machine. So if we don't approach healing and recovery from a holistic perspective, we're putting a Band-Aid on what's happening. We're not treating the root. And I think for anyone who's suffering, struggling in recovery, we need to recognize that what got us there was a whole body, a whole story got us there, right? A whole story. And so to find our way back or to restory ourselves and to create a new story requires looking at and mending and listening to all of those parts. So I don't think there's any other way to truly heal. Even if there's folks who don't use the word holistic, I think anyone who has done any significant healing has done it with looking at those whole parts.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that, restoring. That's so beautiful. Now, what you kind of touched on it, so I'd love to go a little bit deeper. What advice would you give your former self? Maybe the teenage you who is going through the initiations, knowing what you know now, or just what advice do you give your clients who are coming to you that are brand new on this recovery journey, regardless of what they're recovering from?
I think doing it in community, finding community, that's number one. If I look at my teenage self, when I think about how much debilitating anxiety I had and kind of hiding under the covers alone, thinking I was alone, I think that's the swallowed lie, is feeling or believing that we're alone in our struggle. So I'm passionate, and that's why I'm a ritualist. That's why I, even in the scary days when it wasn't as popular, I started teaching and facilitating and priestessing in a priestess schools, because I saw that we need to heal together. We're social primates. We can't do this work alone. So I would say to anyone in recovery to reach out either to a mentor or someone who does one-on-one sessions, group sessions, anything, to come into that community, to come around that community fire. Because step one of healing is recognizing that we're not alone, that we're not the only one who's done this journey, right? We're not the only one who's had anxiety, depression, disordered eating, addiction of any sort, any kind of loss or bereavement. We, for whatever mysterious reason, we've all gone through these initiations and rites of passages. So to have the wisdom and the counsel and the deep empathy of somebody else to hold us is step one of healing.
Now, so I'm just feeling called to share that the initiation that I went through, one of them when I was 16, was substance use disorder. I was addicted to cocaine and meth. And luckily, because of having parents in recovery and many other amazing, magical things, I was able to get back on the track of recovery. So I really am relating to this part of the story of you being a teenager, feeling like you didn't get that normal teenage life, because for me, I was so deep in addiction. And then I was the kid who wasn't doing drug, like, you know, partying anymore, which of course at the time really annoyed me, but now so grateful for that. And I'm just really, since COVID and since the pandemic, we have so many people in our community who are parents of teenagers, and they're having such a hard time right now, right? Like not being able to be in community as kids who are developing in all different ways. So what words would you have for either the parents right now or the kids who have been in isolation this past year?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to name what's going on. Kids are grieving. And they may not have the language for that. They may not be able to say, I'm grieving the loss of being a normal kid or going to high school or having those parties and all those pre-COVID things. So I think recognizing, having that conversation, and just recently, actually, I was talking to some kids and youth about it, and they were appreciating us adults being able to put to words what they couldn't put into words, right? So deep listening. And I think one of the most powerful things an adult can do is to speak to what is, and to not place a judgment call, but to notice the phenomenon, right? I notice this. How are you feeling about this? It may, if I were you, it would really upset me that I couldn't graduate with my peers on stage and hug and kiss and do all those things. So I think recognizing the stress, because what leads to, I know a lot of youth are using substance right now as a response to stress. And that's another key piece, is to recognize acting out. I'm not into pathologizing acting out. I'm into recognizing, how is that a call for attention? So what needs attention right now? In that deep, soulful way, what needs attention? So rather than placing that judgment call, is to inquire and see how kids can come together. So recently, a community I'm connected to, some youth got together just to cry on Zoom, and just to have 20 minutes of a tantrum and just have that expression, because kids and youth they're going through a lot of heat rising, right? Their inner fire is rising. So they need that place of expression, that healthy cauldron to be able to do that.
Yeah. Wow. That's so powerful and so beautiful. I want to have a 20-minute temper tantrum party with all my friends. That sounds great. I'm declaring that now. That's so beautiful. And, you know, what do you say, or how do you speak to people who are navigating like grief and trauma, mental health stuff? And it's, you know, those types of things where outwardly it doesn't look like maybe they're struggling or maybe they're having a hard time, right? Like chronic pain. What do you say to those people who are navigating that territory?
I would say to, again, let it have space. All of our parts need expression. Human beings are designed to express ourselves, right? That's that's what we do. And when we don't give that space, that tender self-compassion, and sometimes I say to my students or the people that I work with, is just turn towards your pain and let it speak. Let it have that 20-minute tantrum, or let the tears flow, not as a means of trying to remedy it even, but rather to allow it to have its, allow our nervous system to go through that full range of motion. And when we do that, we can come back to a set point. It's when we suppress, it's when we repress, that is when things can come out sideways, right? And so I think about, I believe it's Stephen Levine has done so much work in this realm of trauma. And one of the things that stands out in one of his books, I can't remember the title, but he talks about when an animal, a prey, I'm sure you know this, is in the wild and the predator almost gets it, but not quite. What the animal, the small animal will do, will shake, it'll tremor, right? So we have trauma release therapies for this. And as it goes through that tremoring and that release, it then can come back to what's called a healthy set point. But when we don't have that expression, that's when trauma is locked in our cells, and it can just begin to build and mound. And that's what can lead, not always, but it can lead to a variety of complex syndromes and pain and disorders.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that book, Waking the Tiger. And one of my favorite quotes of his is, trauma's in the nervous system, not in the event, which is exactly what you're speaking to right now. So if we can find those tools that get us into our nervous system to complete the response, or just activate the parasympathetic nervous system, like you said, that's such good medicine. Yeah. Beautiful. Now, this is, I couldn't answer this question because it changes every day, but do you have a favorite herb today or of all time, and why?
So for me, it would probably be rose, and the whole rose family is kind of my sweeping answer. There's, you know, only 280 different kinds of plants. But I would say the rose and that whole family, and partly it's because they're anti-inflammatory, and most of us in the modern world suffer from some kind of inflammation. And most of us are recovering from something and working towards healing trauma. And so much of the disease process as a clinical practitioner, most of my day job is working one-on-one with people. And everyone, I would say, is healing from some kind of trauma. And that's where rose petal medicine, and then hawthorn and agrimony and all the other members of the rose family are such champions for where we're at. And I always turn to nature and I look at, you know, what do we have an abundance of in our ecosystem where you and I live? It's hawthorn and rose. They tend to be two of the most abundant plants. And when I think about the people I see in my everyday work, it makes sense. We're all healing from some kind of heartbreak, bereavement, loss, whether it be of our youth that we didn't get to fully live, or whether it be a loved one who's gone, or whether it be the life that we're now living in a pandemic. So I would say them. And then just, I do want to mention the adaptogens, especially for folks in recovery. So that would be herbs like ashwagandha and shatavari, vervain. There's many other ones that we work with, but specifically for folks in recovery, I would say adaptogens are important because they help rewire our nervous system to not so much need to live in that fight or flight, but to remembering, so bringing two lost parts together, remembering what that calm, intact nervous system feels like. So I think that's important.
Beautiful. Yes, I love that. Rose is my favorite. And I just received a 1-pound bag of dried rose petals today. It smells delicious to start making some medicines yes. with them. Okay, last question, I think. Just kind of given the landscape that we're in with the pandemic right now, you know, we are experiencing this collective trauma and people are feeling burnt out, right? Pandemic fatigue. Are there any herbs or rituals or just any recommendations that you have for folks right now? Anything coming through?
Yeah, I think what's important is to recognize what is working. And a very simple ritual that I do with folks, especially those healing from trauma, and I just did that this morning with somebody, is to connect to the parts in their being that feel whole and intact. Because so much of, you know, there's a wonderful phenomenon of the wellness culture and the work that you and I do, healing, ritual, magic, witchcraft, where we're so focused on the healing that sometimes it's re-traumatizing. Constantly looking at where we're wounded, constantly looking at what's painful or what's difficult. And there's merit in that, but there's also a time where it's essential, and this is the work of the healing artist and the priestess, is to know when it's time to turn away from that and to then feed what is whole and holy and what is well. And so I think that's something that I like to do is to practice rituals of what is whole and holy and what is being mended. And even in this time of COVID, I mean, everyone is experiencing it differently. Pandemic fatigue is a real thing, but there's other pieces that are working. So whether that just simply be being able to be with people you love or care about, or spending more time in nature, or fewer airplanes in the sky, focusing on those little things can help change our neurology, right? So what we pay attention to is what feeds, what we feed and what is what grows. So I would say along those lines is something that I like to do with people.
Beautiful. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for your time today and your generosity. For the listeners, please check the show notes. Serafina's website will be there and her Instagram handle. She has the most beautiful resources, free resources on Instagram and on her website, an amazing blog. She does free webinars. She also has apprentice programs like I took. There's so many offerings, so please make sure you do check her out. I hope you enjoyed and received whatever you were looking for in this episode by listening to that. It was such a pleasure to be able to spend time with Serafina in the valley of a really, really beautiful park where we live. If you want to connect with us at She Recovers, we do twice daily free gatherings, so we'd love to have you. So if you haven't yet, check out our website, sherecovers.org, and under the She Recovers Together online section, you will find out all about our free daily gatherings. We are really looking forward to the day when we get to meet in person again and when we get to gather in person. But until then, we also have our Facebook group, She Recovers Together, which again, you can find information on our website. And please do, if you feel called to, please share this episode with someone who you think it might serve. Rate us with 5 stars and send us, give us a review, because that really helps us get the word out about the podcast. And if you're able to, of course, we are always, always so grateful for donations. Every dollar really counts.